Thank you for that. Good morning. And what a beautiful way to start our time together. Well, we've started our time together, but for this portion of it, is to get into that place of gratitude, because that is when we can really hear Spirit speak. Do you know what I'm talking about here? We get into that place of gratitude, and we allow Spirit to move through us, to speak through us, to express in that place. So despite trying to keep it secret from me, I'm aware that Gary's not here today. So I'm using a handheld mic. And Brian, bless his heart, is going to take care of the slides for me today. There's a lot of things that happen when Gary's not here that I have to deal with. And so he sends his love and blessing and greetings. He is speaking right now in Sacramento. He's doing the 9 o'clock and the 11 o'clock services. So he said to please extend his greetings. So who's up for a short quiz today? I'll go for it. Everybody, oh, good. Okay. Just pick B. Well, it's not a multiple choice, I'm afraid. What do the following have in common? A prehistoric caveman waking up with a hungry belly. A Haitian family whose home and entire village has just been destroyed in an earthquake. A newborn baby girl. And a heroin addict living on the streets. What do they all have in common? Well, in a word, survival. Survival. They're all operating from a viewing platform of survival. In the case of our Neanderthal, it's the environment in which he lives. Going back 250,000 years to prehistoric times, every day dawned, bringing the same challenges, finding food, shelter, protection, day after day. And with survival as the main focus, not a lot of time for much else to happen. For the family from Haiti, in the aftermath of the earthquake, it's a shocking and traumatic return to that basics of survival. Again, finding food, water, shelter, and this time grieving and rebuilding their broken lives on top of that. And my son was sent there in the Canadian military to help as a rescue mission for that. So he saw it firsthand. What about our newborn? Well, her very existence rests in the hands of her primary caregivers who must provide for all of her basic needs. Her survival counts on it. And this care and this bonding that happens are necessary and vital elements needed for healthy brain development. It's part of our human condition that we all begin our lives in this vulnerable way. And the drug addict living on the street, he can regress right back to a basic survival worldview. Life becomes only about subsistence, focusing solely on surviving with the number one priority of getting the next fix. And the reason I'm sharing this with you this morning is that I'm beginning a series called Evolution Revolution. And in the upcoming weeks, we're going to be exploring evolutionary transformation through the lens of both cultural and human development, because we can correlate our collective transformation, the cultural paradigm shifts that have occurred throughout history, and we can compare those with our own individual development from infancy to adulthood and beyond. And through that comparison, we can discover some very important insights about what is needed for us to transform and to evolve. Are you up for it? Spoiler alert. When we say evolve, we're really talking about co-evolution. Co-evolution. Without a co, there is no grow. That's my new mantra. This is a picture taken by our own amazing photographer, Courtney Litwin, that shows an example of co-evolution. The bird and the flower both win when the hummingbird shows up for a drink. And so the benefit is reciprocal. And the flower has evolved to have nectar that is especially tasty to hummingbirds. And you see, that's evidence of the interconnectedness of life, interdependence, interbeing. And so in order to travel this co-evolutionary path, We need, it's necessary for us to step out of the story of separation. Step out of the story of separation. This story that we're separate from each other, separate from nature, that is what hides behind a survival worldview. See? Because when we're stuck in survival, we are operating out of a story of separation by having our life be against us in some way. And as we co-evolve, we shift into the heart-centered story of oneness, of interdependence, of interbeing, which undergirds this more integral, holistic worldview that we are evolving toward as a culture. So transformation means we move from every person for him or herself to we're all in this together. And how do we help? Do you see? Because when one of us evolves, all of us benefit. That's the exciting news. Because we're divinely connected with each other, with the spirit within us, at our depths of our being. And as more and more of us grow into and express who we've come here to be, living a more heart-centered life, we reach a tipping point where we see a cultural paradigm shift to a kinder, more compassionate world, and we're heading there. Do you feel it? With feeling. That's where we're headed. And all of us are part of making that happen. We're all bringing it forth. So we might think of each facet of evolutionary change as a rung on a ladder. Sometimes it's shown as a spiral. I'm going to use a ladder as the metaphor. And in order to make that climb, we have to include every step. We can't miss any of the rungs. Got to take one at a time. And at the same time, it's necessary for us to move to a new rung in order to get greater height, right? So we can't skip any rungs as we transcend where we've been, but we also include all of the height that we've gained in earlier rungs. I'm on fire with this. It's so exciting. We bring the learning that we've gleaned on the way with us as we move up that ladder, transcend and include. And as we do that, we might think of it as a paradigm climb. It's the name of my talk today. Woohoo. So wherever we are on that ladder, there's nothing wrong or bad or better or worse. It's just that our viewpoint changes. We can see things from a far greater perspective as we climb. You see, more becomes apparent to us that's already there. So we've gained a foothold on the ladder today, and the survival worldview is the first rung in the ladder in both arenas of evolutionary transformation, whether it's cultural or individual. And we're going to build on this in the weeks to come, looking at different eras of history, where what the cultural paradigm shift was, and then comparing that to our own co-evolutionary patterns. Are you up for it? All right. Me too. So, evolutionary transformation. What does that mean? Every week, we affirm that we're about transforming lives. And through conscious conversations, as you heard, members of the Evolutionary Council are beginning to collect those transformational stories. And while we can start to get a picture of what transformation means, the truth is it means different things to different people at different times of their life, depending on what's happening in their present situation or their current life conditions. All of that factors in and where they find themselves on that evolutionary process. And a family whose life has been totally devastated by an earthquake will have a much different definition of transformation than a person whose world is stable and intact. And when our very survival is at stake, development on that ladder is arrested. It just, you know, we can't grow into who we've come here to be if all of our energy is focused on just making it through the day. Do you see that? And that doesn't just go for people who've had some kind of natural disaster happen. The person whose life is fairly solid at the moment is not impervious to reverting back to that survival mode. Think about your own life. Have there been times when you've been shell-shocked in some way by life? Yes. And it's all you can do to get by, day by day. You know, when my mother died, besides being in the depths of grieving the loss, I also watched helplessly as my father descended into a hellish world of desperation where he tried so valiantly to survive her death. And my brothers and I were very worried about Dad. How is Dad ever going to manage on his own? And living so far away from him, it was doubly hard for me to help in any way. I did what I could. I called him several times a week. We made plans for him to come and stay with us at Christmas. I talked to my relatives regularly who were trying to support him, but to no avail. My mom had been his solid rock for over half a century of marriage, and he did not know how to live without her. 3 months, almost to the day after she passed away, he suffered a massive heart attack and died instantly. And I can remember walking so numbly through that time, shocked from both parents being taken so closely, and just making it through myself day by day. So think about your own life when you've had your survival moments, because none of us are immune from this. And so when someone's stuck in survival mode, what do we do? What do we do? We help them with compassion, if we can. You know, if someone is starving to death, that's not the time for a lesson on prosperity thinking. And it's definitely not the time to ask them what in their consciousness brought this to that. It's never okay to ask that question, by the way. It's time to feed them before we teach someone to fish. Do you see? Why? Because when they're in that survival state of mind, when we're in that state, we don't have the capacity to learn. We just don't. And here's why. There's something else that these four have in common. All of them are in their reptilian brain, living by instinct, impulsively. And that higher order of thinking, rational thinking, is not available. It goes offline. It's not accessible to us when we're stuck in survival mode. And we cannot actualize our divine, deeper potential if we are completely immersed in a survival worldview. Do you see that? Do you see why it's so important for us to know this and to work with this? Because neurologically, we're steeped in the hormones of stress that arise from having the world be against us. We're inhabiting the story of separation at that point. So we want to be mindful of others' experiences and with compassion and kindness, help when we can. Do what we can through the eyes and through the heart of our shared humanity. One life, interconnected, interbeing, acting from that place. Knowing that we're co-evolving, because when I lift you up, when you lift me up, everyone wins. Because what happens to a person when they're struggling to survive and the web of connection is missing for them? When no one has their back? What about if in those early years our needs for security and safety or physical necessities are not met through neglect or abuse of some kind? There is a very high likelihood of arrested development in some way, and that we will live our lives stuck in this survival mode, run by the reptilian brain. You know, maybe always being on the lookout for what's wrong, you know, living by the hormones of stress, suspicious, not trusting people, turning to violence as a way of to cope. We're living the story of separation when that happens, and we will see it everywhere. And living our lives that way leads us to having a focus on the outer world to the exclusion of any authentic relationship with our innermost self. You see? And we don't ever get completely beyond this developmental level. And we might move to the next rung, but we will have lots of unfinished business from that era that stays with us and weighs us down. Do you know what I'm talking about here? And in the prisons, we hear lots of stories from people whose early needs for safety and protection were not met, who are living the story of separation, and you can see firsthand the consequences of that. And it doesn't excuse the crime, but it does give us a window into another's suffering. And guess what? We all have unfinished business to some degree, depending on our childhood. And this is not about throwing shade at our parents. It's part of the human condition, see? And part of our evolutionary journey is learning to develop and master kindfulness. I love this word. This is my new favorite word. Kindfulness, being mindful of others and our own suffering and being the presence of compassion and kindness and caring, both for ourselves and for others, and that comes from living the story of oneness. Isn't that cool? I mean, you may not resonate personally with these Mad Max kind of scenarios. However, can you relate to whatever struggle you may have with your own sense of well-being and worth? Can you see how unfinished business may have become a detriment in some way to your ability to be a presence of compassion and love? Because our stuff gets in the way. Behaviors like needing to be right, needing to control, avoiding, resisting conflict, all of these are signs that we're in relation to some unfinished business. Anybody ever have those behaviors? So Oprah tells us we're asking the wrong question. It's not what is wrong with this person, it's what happened to this person or didn't happen. And this is why the Q process is so important for us on our spiritual journey. As we climb this ladder, we need to take care of the baggage that is still lurking from the earlier rungs, or we get so weighed down, we stop moving. And you know, I'm speaking in metaphors here, but there's something very real about carrying a heavy load that keeps getting in our way of growth. It's like jogging with one of those weighted jackets. You ever done that? Oh my God, it's crazy. So, you see that evolutionary transformation can only happen as we work through our stuff, when our past has been integrated, when we're no longer being run by lizard brain. Now we can make some inroads. And we do that through the power of the heart. The heart is the portal to the story of interbeing, as it helps us to encompass the greater vision of heart and mind-centered living, which is what this whole series is about, becoming familiar with the adaptive collective worldviews that have evolved over the millennia, and through that discovering more and more about our own individual transformative journey, because the collective cultural paradigm shifts that we identify throughout history happen to mirror very closely the stages of our own individual development. So the world of form evolves. And if you have any doubt about that, take a look at what your body is made up of. Subatomic particles, multicellular organisms, reptilian instincts, mammalian emotions, primate cortex. Our bodies are made up of past evolutionary elements. Growth and change is our natural state. However, at the center of form is the unchanging. It's the infinite presence, the one life. As the poet Robert Frost puts it, I love this, we dance around in a circle and suppose the secret sits in the middle and knows. What if transformation is about discovering that secret? What if evolution is really moving ever closer to that center? And in order to do that, we need to simply clear away what's hiding it, which is our unfinished business. Transformation is an inward journey of the heart where we embody an ever greater capacity, the ability to interpret and experience our lives from a reality of oneness. Do you see that? Isn't that cool? Really? And according to the philosopher and theorist Ken Wilber, four things need to be present for transformational evolution to happen. The first is an understanding of our inherent wholeness. Ironically, we cannot evolve into more until we know that we are enough as we are. And that means that we embrace all of us with self-compassion. That kindfulness needs to be showered on ourselves as well, even and especially the parts that we don't like to look at, you know. So all the parts of ourselves need to be welcome at the table. Otherwise, we have unfinished business that will keep showing up at our doorstep until we take care of it. So we embrace our wholeness. At the same time, we recognize we're part of something greater. We're whole and complete as we are, yet part of an ever-expanding consciousness, ever-evolving. And the fourth and final component is connection to that greater self, whether we call it divine mind, source, field of unlimited possibilities, God, infinite presence, one life, divine love, whatever it is. We connect to it, we feel the oneness. And in so doing, we help to move from a story of separation to a reality of interconnectedness and oneness. So, we, one, honor our inherent wholeness. Two, we embrace that which we've found to be less than whole in the past. Three, we recognize we're part of something greater. And four, we connect to that greater self. And when those four elements are present, we now have the potential to evolve into a greater and greater expression of who we truly are. Evolutionary transformation. One life living as each one of us, co-evolving. Changing, transforming, becoming more and more, and living the reality of one life. Are you ready to put that into practice? You're ready for a paradigm climb? Well, I'd like us to celebrate today together, and let's do a little celebration dance. Are you up for it? I've been asking everybody, did you bring your dancing shoes today? So here's my request. I'm going to play a song, and if you want to dance, please dance. I will be dancing. If you want to come down here and dance, come down here and dance. You want to stay at your seat, stay there. If you want to sit, perfectly fine to sit. But I will ask us all to clap. There's a clap. This is a live recording, so we're going to be clapping along with a huge crowd of people. Now, this is a song from the 80s by an Austrian band named Opus called Life is Life. And there's a la 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 part that I want us all to sing together. Are you ready? Aren't you glad you got up early this morning to come to church? All right. Take it away, Brian.